The world is a better place because of Kim Kardashian's empire,
Cheetos,
fleece material,
and Discorder.
It's a local independent music magazine from CITR.
Which means that we can print whatever we heckin' want.
Album and live show reviews, interviews with artists, and sweet illustrations grace our pages.
And even you, listener, can contribute.
Just visit citr.ca/discorder/contribute.
You can grab it around town or read it at discorder.ca.
Forever local and forever free.
LGBTQ.
Dave Radio, Fridays at noon on CITR.
Wow, wow, Dave, you're so sway. Oh, Dave, I like your shave.
And we're the Daves. I'm David Bedenick.
I'm Dave Campbell.
I'm Dave Frank.
We're the Daves.
And you're listening to CITR FM 101.9.
CITR Radio.
And these are the Daves of our lives. I don't know what's going on here. There it is. Somebody's messing around with my board when I'm trying to work. It's Friday, the 11th of May, 2018, and this is Dave Radio with Radio Dave on the radio. We're broadcasting live on CITR 101.9 FM and streaming on the World Wide Web at CITR.ca from our studios underlooking the agora of the Palatial Student Nest on the Musqueam territory of Ulksan, better known to you as the Point Grey campus of the University of British Columbia. On the program today, the Doxa Festival of Documentary Films is in town. We'll meet some one Saskatchewan-based and one Inuit-based filmmaker whose work is being shown this weekend. And the Revolver Theatre Festival is back later this month. We'll have a preview of one of the plays in that. We'll also let you know what's going on in theatre this weekend, plus the usual call board and lots of local music. It's Vancouver's go-to hour for local independent theatre, film, and music, and it starts right now. Don't touch that dial. Okay, we are here now, and we have a mystery guest. Mystery guest, identify yourself, please.
My name is Raina von Waldenberg.
Well, hi.
Hi, Dave.
Thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
So what brought you in today, Raina?
I'm here because there's a very wild play that's happening at the Revolver Festival in May. It's called 12 Minute Madness.
Okay. So what is it? Is it 12 minutes because it's only 12 minutes long, or what's it all about?
It's 12 minutes because it's the first 12 minutes inside a woman's mind after she has uncovered a repressed memory of having been sexually abused by her grandfather. So it's the first 12 minutes of total chaos and wildness that happens in her mind.
Wow. It's kind of like Planck time.
Planck time?
Yeah, that's the moment just after the Big Bang.
Oh.
When everything expands rapidly.
Nice. Yes. Exactly.
So it's kind of like that. So whose brainchild is this?
So it's my brainchild.
Uh-huh.
And it's my story.
Yeah.
And so on stage, you see 12 twats and a harp.
Mm-hmm.
And those 12 twats are...
I think they used to play the Smiling Buddha.
Well, you can turn them upside down and then they're not so smiling. And so, yeah, they're 12 wild women who are representing different parts of my psyche.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And those different parts have a lot to say to each other.
Right. So what identifies some of those different parts for us?
So, for example, there's Linda Kunt.
Uh-huh.
She's a drunk social worker.
Right.
And she represents sort of the shame pleasure body.
Uh-huh.
Right. And then we've got this big fat mafia wannabe called Cigar Chomper, who's right. from fucking Brooklyn, yeah. and he wanna fucking kill the grandpa.
Right.
Doing it gentleman style, right? Yeah. We've got Baby Nazi, who's also wants to kill the grandpa, but yeah. wants to kill the grandma too, and they're a little team.
Uh-huh.
We've got a sadistic nurse named Smoker who hates everybody.
Mm-hmm.
We've got...
So all these 12 characters, they are all trying to sort of deal with the same revelation at the same time.
Exactly.
And how to also, as you say, it's very chaotic at the beginning because everyone's got some very strong feelings
yeah.
about what should be done.
And it's funny as hell,
and so
man.
So it's a battle for dominance.
Exactly. Yeah. And there's a ton of comedy that happens because mm-hmm. Sex abuse is like such a heavy subject,
yeah.
right? But I decided that if we were to keep it a heavy subject, we'd all kind of fall into this dark place
yeah.
and kind of like vagina monologues, like, oh, the poor vaginas, right? So instead I'm like celebrating this pain and finding a lot of humor in it.
Yeah.
And it's super candid. Like I'm not holding back with any of the parts of the psyche that have to deal with, like, you know, any of the truth that actually happens.
Well,
inside.
You can't yeah. because the audience knows. And as soon as you start closing doors again, they lose interest and you've lost your story.
Yeah.
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 So that's, I commend you for stepping forward and telling it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's a bit scary.
I bet. Is this your first foray into stage writing?
No, I've been doing this for, I'm an old lady, I'm 51,
uh-huh.
and I'm from New York City,
yeah,
and I moved here 6 years ago. So this 12-Minute Madness is an excerpt and a rewrite
right.
from a longer full-length play called Das Kasper Theater,
oh.
which I produced in New York City in 1998,
uh-huh.
which, by the way, was... a crucial time for this whole sex abuse thing.
Yeah.
Because it was the time of the False Memory Syndrome Foundation
yep.
and child sex abuse hysteria. So there was a lot of backlash
mm-hmm.
to this play. Oddly enough, without knowing it, right, we produced it at the Fringe Festival last year.
Yeah.
And that was September. And in October, the Me Too movement erupted.
Yeah.
So the timing is really weird. There's a 20-year gap.
Yeah. You just seem to find the right moment.
Yeah, to put my finger on the pulse, so to speak.
Well, I've got something to say. So, who else is sharing this journey with you? Who else is on stage?
Oh my God, a whole bunch of.
Well, yeah.
Awesome. So let's say for the quick answer would be that half. Let's just say half the cast is SFU students
mm-hmm.
or recent alums.
Yeah.
And the other half is UFV, University of Fraser Valley,
right?
Alums or students.
Yeah.
And then also my niece, who's a fashion designer, but she's a harpist and she's an emerging performer.
Yeah.
A lot of families involved. My brother is the assistant director. His girlfriend, like almost like his wife, is the producer. My son is the creative consultant. My husband is the creative consultant.
Mm-hmm. She's now looking to her brother for guidance, and he's very
stoically
quietly,
do you want to say something?
Quietly nodding. He could give a list, but he won't. Oh, we'll take you off the hot seat. No, that's cool. And that's really good that you're getting students involved. So how did that come about?
Let me see. It came about because at UFV there was a group of six fierce, crazy girls that
mm-hmm.
I just spontaneously called the Twat Club.
Yeah. Do you have a previous association with UFV?
I've been working there for 5 years.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So this is a gathering of folks you're familiar with.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. In fact, each actor in the cast is handpicked.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm looking for is human beings that are kind.
Yeah.
And that are willing to go completely nuts, actually.
Yeah.
And put themselves out there. And that are also that have been trained in postmodern physical theater.
Uh-huh.
Like kinesthetic awareness, yeah. Viewpoints work. And Grotowski work, so I've trained almost all of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us a little bit about that. That sounds interesting. What's Grotowski work?
Jerzy Grotowski is yeah. was a Polish director. So he was a student of Stanislavski.
Okay.
Stanislavski is like the big cheese ball, yeah. Right? And so he was the only student that went away from the psychological approach to acting
right.
And went into the physical approach to acting.
Mm-hmm.
So it's super physical. It's it's mind-body work,
right.
Basically. And it's super present because the body is in the present, right?
Yeah.
So there's no like, oh, I'm going to cry now because I'm going to think about my grandma when she died and I'm going to like, you know, pretend that this moment is about my grandma dying and all that stuff.
Yeah.
That a lot of Stanislavski actors do, which is great sometimes, right? And it works and great for film. But this type of training is what is actually happening right now to me.
Right. So it's more immediate, more spontaneous, more present, as you said.
And yeah. Connected to the audience, right? So mm-hmm. A lot of the sort of postmodern theater training is about whether or not you look at the audience, you're connected to the audience, and
yeah.
Your audience is your partner.
Mm-hmm.
So in this play, actually, we're bringing the audience right in with us.
Yeah. Well, that sounds fascinating. If you're going to talk, you have to use a mic.
Here, come over
no
here,
whispering
brother.
In the back.
This is Avian.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello. yeah. Considering the audience as the noble partner,
oh, right.
as another entity on stage.
Yeah.
And making sure that connection is there.
Yeah. So it's no bullshit then, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
if someone farts in the audience, the performer responds to
it. It happened.
Right?
You can't ignore it. No, everybody else knows it happened.
Right, exactly.
Well, this sounds fascinating and very exciting. And where can we see it?
So it's at the Kulch, the Historic.
Yeah.
And it's May 23rd to 27th.
So very short run.
Yeah, four performances only.
Yeah.
It's a 40-minute piece.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I have to say though, it is actually a heavy subject, right?
Yeah.
And it can be triggering.
Mm-hmm.
So people that have either experienced any kind of trauma,
yeah.
Or specifically sex abuse, or have known people that have experienced sex abuse, although incredibly triggering, they find the play to be super honest and
yeah.
Also holistic. A lot of people have said to me, oh my God, I've never seen a play about this subject where all aspects of, right, all the
yeah.
Different shades of gray of what actually right. Occurs was being represented.
So it's not something to fear?
No, because it's funny as fuck. Can
yeah.
I say that on radio?
Well, you just did, so... Talk about being in the moment. it just happened. Yeah, yeah. But I mean, in terms of people who might be sensitive or might be concerned about being triggered by what they're about to experience, is there a catharsis through it that because they sort of come out the other end?
It does. Yeah,
yeah.
It comes out the other end, just like any human emotion. You know,
mm-hmm.
It begins with shock.
Yeah,
and then. Anger and then freaking violence,
yeah.
Right? Violent feelings of violence,
yeah.
And then basically most of the twats die as the mind integrates itself and
yeah.
Moves then to the sadness
mm-hmm.
Of discovering, oh my God, I think it did happen, to the biggest moment of all, which is surrendering the shame, right?
Mm-hmm.
Coming in contact with the shame. And the shame being that, you know, that it's, as a little kid, it wasn't all bad too, yeah. right? That it did feel good. Mm. And so there's shame about that.
Of
and
course.
There's some weird complicity that happens
yeah.
as the kid starts to feel complicitous.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very complicated
yeah.
stuff. And I think that's an aspect that's not often talked about with sex abuse is because we think, oh, the poor victim and the bad oppressor.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, the poor victim, but the victim can also feel I don't know. I guess, you know, the victim. You mean
responsible?
Responsible, and it wasn't. It was sort of enjoyable too.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's a relationship.
That's a scary one to deal with.
It is.
Yeah. Well, wow. 12 minute madness. And as you say, it's at the Cults Historic, and
yeah.
the dates again are the 23rd
to the 27th.
And how do people get tickets and find out more?
There's a website.
Yeah.
12minutemadness.com.
Yeah.
And it's the number 12 and then Minute Madness.
All right. Are you on Facebook too?
And yes, we're on Facebook
okay, I'll
as
link,
well.
Okay, I'll link it on to our Facebook page so that listeners can find it easily.
Great. And also up in the Air Theater
yeah.
website.
Great. All right. Well, thank you both for coming in.
Thank you, Dave.
Have a great run. All right. Let's play this other piece of music that started kind of spontaneously a little while ago.
Good for nothing, boy. You'll only bring me down. But I can't help myself. Guess I like you around. Put a little trust in a hated man. Drop dead gorgeous, going nowhere fast. Just a little crush on a hated man. I'm feeling like a wreck and this ship's gone.
Got his fingers in my shipwreck. He's a shipwreck.
There we go. Now we're back in back in normal world. Holy smoke, it's already been a day. In fact, it's been a couple of days. I'm just going to move the mic a little bit. Excuse me for the noise. There we are. I just did three telephone interviews with some filmmakers, two of which we're going to listen to later on in the hour. And then Raina and her brother just showed up. I mean, they didn't just show up, they were invited. But I didn't really have a lot of time to prepare. So I was learning as you were learning. And so that was fun. Talk about being spontaneous on radio. Oh, man, yesterday was crazy. We went down to Seattle to see a production of the play that originated in Victoria at the Fringe Festival. It played the Push Festival a few years ago, made it to an off-Broadway New York theater. It was called Ride the Cyclone. It's playing at the ACT, the A Community Theater at 7th and Union in Seattle. And we almost didn't make it. My goodness. Let's see. Where should we start? Our tickets were for the 2 o'clock matinee. And we thought, let's see. It probably takes about 2.5 hours. I haven't been to Seattle in years. It probably takes about 2.5 hours to get down there. So let's be careful and give it 4 hours. So we were going to leave at 10. We actually didn't leave till 10:30. And then we got down to the border, and the 40-minute wait turned into a 60-minute wait because we got in the one line that moved the slowest. And then when we finally got out, we found we had about an hour and 20 minutes to make an hour and 40-minute drive. And so, of course, we got a speeding ticket with about 5 minutes left before we got into town. But fortunately, they let us in. They actually let us into the theater, and we got to sit at the back and watch the whole show. I think we missed the first 5 minutes of it, but we'd already seen Ride the Cyclone a few years ago, so we know the story. We know what it's about, and really enjoyed it, and ended up having a great rest of the day in Seattle. So much for that, but man, it was stressful. Okay, let's see. Let's do a quick break, and then we're going to come back and talk a little about the Doxa Film Festival. I've got a couple of filmmakers who've got some really interesting stories to tell, and so we're going to let them tell that right after this.
You know what's better than reading a great magazine? Reading a great magazine that also helps you fight poverty. Megaphone Magazine is sold by homeless and low-income vendors on the streets of Vancouver and Victoria. Vendors buy magazines for 75 cents and sell them for $2. It's flexible, low-barrier work for people who may not have access to traditional jobs. Download the Megaphone app to find vendors and buy the magazine, even when you don't have change. Initiative to give more voice to local women artists and musicians. Mixtapes is a Vancouver-based biannual mixtape featuring women-identified musicians and sound artists from the Pacific Northwest. The Spring 2018 edition will be coming out on May 10th, with all proceeds going to the Downtown Eastside Women's Shelter. Women-identified artists are invited to send their submissions to btchtapes@gmail.com. The release fundraiser will be held on May 10th at the Redgate Review Stage, featuring artists selected for this edition of the cassette.
So the Doxa Documentary Film Festival is going on at various sites throughout Vancouver. And it started on Wednesday. And you may have noticed last week's Georgia Strait had a nice feature on it. And the artist on the cover, I had the honor of having a conversation with this morning. Her name is Asiniak, and I butchered it like I thought I would, but she says it properly on the interview, so there's that. She has produced a beautiful piece of film. It's a combination of animation and archival footage about the Inuit and their culture and how they've been presented. It's called 3000, and you can see it tomorrow, or is it tonight? Where is it? I just had it here. Oh, for cornflakes. There we go. Today at 6 o'clock at SFU Woodward's. So let's sit back and listen to Assignac. So why don't we just start by telling us your name?
Okay, my name is Assignac.
Mm-hmm. And where are you from?
I'm from Nunavik, from Inuktitut, Nunavik. Mm-hmm. But I live most of the time in Montreal.
Yeah. And I just took a look at where your village is. It's right at the far north of Ungava on the Hudson's Bay. Is it a small village?
It's more than 1,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's about 1,500 people.
Yeah. I spent a short time in the Western Arctic in Inuvik, and that's about average size for a community in the north. It's
This is second biggest in Nunavik.
Mm-hmm.
And we have one in Nunavik that's 200 people.
Yeah.
So for us, it's a bit big.
Yeah. I know the feeling. So let's talk about your film. It's called 3000. And I just watched it again for the second time this morning, and first of all, it's a beautiful piece of film. It's a really enjoyable thing to view. So congratulations on that.
Thank you so much.
And I just want to know. I guess my first thought is just what spurred you on to make the film? Like it's largely a collection of archival footage, film that had been shot at various times over the last 100 years of various Inuk and northern peoples. Was it something that you sort of found and then decided to do something with, or did you start with an idea and then gather the material?
Well, first I want to say that it's all Inuit other than like the Khalunat, the white people that mm-hmm. came up. So there's no other indigenous people in it.
Okay.
And that's really because it's a focus on us, even in a broad way, because we all have slightly different variations on the way that we live.
Yeah.
But we all had a similar experience as Inuit with colonization and also encounters with the various churches.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that I made it, was that what the question was?
Well, not so much the, yeah, I guess, the, you know.
Or like yeah, what drove
let's,
it?
Let's take that, yeah. What drove it? That's a good question, yeah.
Okay. Well, I think I saw that there was a need for communication with people outside of ourselves to make there a way to understand that we're living today like everyone with computers mm-hmm. and cars and all of these things. We're not living in a separate world. There's often a dialogue about people living between two worlds, and I don't experience it as such because we're still living all in the same world, but our world has things from another time and from our ancestors also included in it.
Mm-hmm. I noticed that you start out with a lot of black and white footage of sort of our stereotypical view of the Inuit and the Arctic life, a lot of ice and a lot of fur and very traditional way, but also kind of locked in history, locked in the past, that there's it's hard to acknowledge that like you said, we all live in a modern world. And as the film progresses, we see more and more of that change and more of that that reality happening.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was the amazing thing. So because I had a proposition that for this film that allowed me to explore the archives, it gave me this great opportunity to see this change over time, but also the things that remain within us and that we keep propelling into the world. So there's things like one thing in the film that they're fishing near the beginning and they're still fishing at the end. Mm-hmm. Like that's something that we'll keep doing as long as the fish aren't poisoned and the water isn't poisoned, then we'll keep doing that. Mm-hmm. And that's a part of our identity and who we are. And even though, you know, lots of things might change around us, there are these things that are so integral to who we are, and so important and kind of just like every day, and they stay.
Mm-hmm. And you've got some very creative collaborators working with you as well, including the music from Tanya Tagic, and I've forgotten now the name of the other singer.
It's Selena Kahlo.
Mm-hmm. And also the animation. Tell me a little bit about working with them.
So for the animation, I worked with two animators. One's called Defiston and one's called Jonathan Ng. We have two kinds of animation. One of them is like 3D animation, more of a like CGI kind of orientation. And then the second part of the animation is the 2D animation, which is all of the character animation. So whenever there's people animated, they're done in a different style. And this was a really amazing thing that happened because the 3D animation is kind of like the latest thing that people are doing. Mm-hmm. And then the 2D animation is the way that people have been animating for a very long time. So even within the film, as we see, you know, how many different kinds of film cameras were used throughout the footage that I've used, there's definitely like 16 millimeter, like probably a Bolex 16 millimeter camera, and then we also use like the last footage will have a very a modern camera that shot raw footage, and then so that's like really behind the scenes, I guess. It's like there's the technology also that happens, that changes, and that we see the old and the new as well.
Yeah. And what's the meaning of the title? Why is it called 3000?
3000 is so the film is ending in the future. And that's one of the animated parts. Mm-hmm. And the year that I'm guessing that it's ending in is 3000.
Yeah. It's a beautiful vision of the future too, because the impression I get anyway from seeing it is that it's still a traditional community, but laid out and designed in a very modern, futuristic way.
Well, what it is for me is I asked my family, I asked them, because I can't decide everything on my own,
yeah.
So I have to ask them, what do you know, their opinion about it. But I didn't ask them about the future. I asked them about right now. Like, yeah. If you could live anyway right now, how would you want to live? And lots of my cousins told me they want to be able to spend more time on the land. And yeah. The town is good, and there's some nice things about it. But it's that we live there permanently all year, and that's not really how people want to live. So what we see in this idea of the future is that there's a town, and in the town I imagine it to be very kind of communal apartments where people share kitchens and stuff like that, so that it's kind of less of a permanent space and more of a space that people can come to and feel comfortable, but it's not like where people spend all of their time, so you don't need that much space. And then out, we only see one, but it's like kind of like a camping area, so that's more like how we would have used to have lived with, you know, with 3 or 5 families, not a lot of families together. helping each other living and doing things together. So that's what I tried to show. And I think at least where I'm from, people would be happy to be able to live that way.
You know, I think not just from where you're from, I think a lot of us would be happier living that way as well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, speaking of the future, what's your next film project going to be?
Well, I'm going to start another project very shortly. Mm-hmm. That will be about one of my family members.
Yeah.
But they've passed away, so I have to interview people that knew them.
Yeah.
To be able to, like, meet them for the first time for me, because I never met them.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of family too, I just also wanted to acknowledge that your grandmother is featured in 3000. She's the one doing the grass weaving, isn't she?
She is,
yeah.
And she passed away. So after maybe a year after we filmed that, and that footage was filmed for my father's film Timuti.
Uh-huh.
And she passed away, and luckily we didn't use all of the footage for Timuti, so I was able to use it in my film and have her be a part of it. And it's dedicated to her as well, because within our customs, we have someone that's called a dresser, and she's my dresser, which means that she's created a big part of my personality and my what I'm good at. I owe it all to her, and I'm supposed to give the first thing of anything to her, so I decided that all my films should be dedicated to her, so they will be.
As they should be. It's a beautiful sentiment, and I'm sure she'd be honored for that tribute.
I mean... it's important that I keep her in my heart and my mind, so yeah. It's one way of doing it.
Right. Well, thank you very much for taking some time and talking about your film with us, and I wish you all the best success in the future.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It was nice to talk to you, too.
Thank you. So, Sin Yek's, her film is called 3000, and it's showing at SFU Woodward's Theater on Hastings Street at 6 o'clock tonight. And if you want to find out more, look it up on doxafestival.ca, or just go to Facebook and type in DOXA and find out all about 3000 and all the other films, including our next topic, which is from Saskatchewan. It's called To Wake Up Lakota Language. Nakota, with an N. Wake Up Nakota Language, and the filmmaker is Louise Big Eagle, and she spent a few minutes to talk to us this morning.
My name is Louise Big Eagle.
And your film is called To Wake Up the Nakota Language.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about what's the film about, what's the story?
The story is just about my uncle, Armin MacArthur, who is kind of one of the last fluent speakers, I guess, in Saskatchewan, particularly on Fezzenup Nakota Nation. And it just kind of like follows him as he goes to communities, to his own community, to kind of try bring back that language into the community and get people interested in wanting to learn it, and try... like I said, revive, bring, kind of wake up that language and back in First Nations communities.
Mm-hmm. Is Nakota was that the primary First Nations language of the prairies?
No, because we're kind of a smaller group. Mm-hmm. Because we do originally come from the States, like the Montana area around there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why a lot of us, we are close to the border for Nakota people.
Yeah.
And
so I guess my question then is at its height, at its peak, how prevalent a language was it? Maybe before the settlers came, how many Nakota speakers were there?
I think I'd read like 3 million Nakota people.
Mm-hmm.
And then we eventually dwindled down just to, like, thousands.
Wow.
Yeah. And then in, I think in its entirety now today, there's, I think, 100, maybe a little over 100 fluent speakers left.
Wow, that's devastating.
Yeah, it is. It's on one of the, it's on the endangered list for languages. Yeah.
So what kind of efforts is your uncle making to preserve and resurrect the language?
He is currently, he teaches at the First Nations University in Regina. So he teaches along with Dr. Vincent Colette. Dr. Vincent Colette comes from, I think, Quebec. So he learned the language with Armand, through Armand, I guess, in other ways. And then he came over here because they used to have a teacher there, which was my auntie, but she retired. So now they're teaching it there. And he also goes to, like, Fezzenham First Nations, Wiper First Nations, and he also goes back to Fort Peck and Montana area to kind of learn hand signs, Nakota hand signs. Mm-hmm. So then he comes back with, along with others like Pete Bigstone, G.R. MacArthur, and comes back to the communities to teach that.
So he's learning along the way as well?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because he finds it that hand signs, younger generation learns faster that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how did he feel about having his niece filming him?
He was right for it right away as soon as I had mentioned it.
Uh-huh.
He's comfortable with me, right? And I, like we were talking, we haven't seen each other in a while because, you know, I moved away from the reserve to go to school and I've been out in the city probably for like 10 years now. So it kind of gave us a little bit of reconnection back with each other, and as well as my auntie, because I was able to go to their home and to Fezzenham. So he was comfortable and he was happy to do it. And he's happy that I'm taking that initiative, I guess, to bring this awareness that Nakota language, as well as many other First Nation languages, are in dire need of being brought back into communities before they do eventually disappear.
And how successful has it been?
It's been good. Like, I had some feedback from people, especially a lot of people from universities in the language departments.
Yeah.
They want to show the film to their departments, also to their classes. I heard feedback from parents who are in Nakota who are like, you know, my daughter watched it, now she wants to learn her language. So to me, that's important, just to see people wanting to learn it now and seeing, hey, you know, this is my language, I should be speaking it, this is what the Creator gave us to be able to speak to Him, so I should get back there and learn it and put that initiative in to learn it.
Yeah, and that's, again, where the title comes from, to wake up the language.
Mm-hmm.
It's not dead, it's just sleeping.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as I say, you know, a lot of, you know, you have, what is that, generational knowledge. You
mm-hmm.
know, it's there. Our languages are there still with us. We just have to revive it, you know, bring it back and want to learn it again and bring that back to, especially young people, to want to learn their languages and not just be set on knowing English.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And film is one way of doing it. Other creative pursuits as well, theater and music. And
mm-hmm.
There's all kinds of different opportunities to bring life back into the language.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Like my 11-year-old nephew mm-hmm. just wrote a children's book in Nakota. So that's a start right there. And seeing a lot of kids now, he's inspired a lot of young kids. Like my 5-year-old niece is like, hey, you know, he wrote a book. It's in Nakota. And she thinks like the coolest thing.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And,
oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And that was kind of like one of my main goals in this film was that's why I wanted it right away to start with being just the language so people hear it and just listen to how beautiful it sounds.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this film is part of the Doc Lab Saskatchewan program.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
What it was is just they kind of put out a call to people to kind of put in their ideas on short films,
mm-hmm.
short documentaries. And so I submitted. I think there was over 30 of us who submitted in Saskatchewan. And, yeah, they chose 3 of us. And what it was I think it was 12 weeks of a program
mm-hmm.
where they set up everything for us. When we got to work with mentors, like a director, producers, so directors came and had little workshops for us. They just kind of gave us that feel how it is to be a professional filmmaker, you know, to have a crew and work with producers and, you know, also if we had questions or if we didn't know something, they were always there to help us. Them, like the National Film Board and Creative Saskatchewan and the Saskatchewan Film Pool were all great, you know, working together and for this project.
Wonderful. Well, the film runs tomorrow afternoon, Saturday at 4:30 at the Van City Theater, and you'll be shown in conjunction with another film called Those Who Came Will Hear.
Yes.
Do you know about that one?
I know a little bit. I know it's another language film as well, just kind of also about the awareness of languages, First Nations languages. So I'm excited to see that too. I'm looking forward to watching it.
Well, great. I hope it does well. And what's in store in the future for you?
I am going to be working on a few films this summer in terms of just bringing, I guess, public and society awareness on our cultures, like our, I guess it's, I should say, like ceremonies. And there's no, you know, how they consider sometimes us to be pagans or paganism, you know, and it's not like that, you know, just to give some education on them. And
well, thanks for doing this, and thanks for sharing your film with us, and keep on working. Thanks for sharing these stories, because it's important for all of us to learn.
Yes, thank you for having
me. Good. Thanks, Louise.
Okay, have a good day.
You too.
Bye.
So that's Louise Goodeagle and her film, Wake the Nakota Language, is going to be shown tomorrow afternoon, 4:30, at the Van City Theater on Seymour Street, and again... No, it's not on Seymour Street. Yes, it is on Seymour Street. I'm having a goofy day. I think I need more medication. I think that's the problem. Anyway, tomorrow, 4:30, Van City Theater on Seymour Street. The film is called Wake the Nakota Language, and it's part of the Doxa Festival. Check out Doxa, D-O-X-A festival.ca. All right, we're rapidly running out of time. Let's do the call board. Dave Radio Call Board, featuring auditions for and calls for crews, musicians, and other contributors for productions around Metro Vancouver. We believe that auditions announced here should be open to artists of all cultural, sexual, gender, ability, and other identities. In fact, we encourage everyone to read for everything. Just go for it. We have about a week left to make your submission for the John Moffat and Larry Lillo Award. That is a... award that is presented every year at the Jesse Richardson Theater Awards. And this particular award is to assist mature West Coast theater artists to further their artistic development. It's a $2,000 cash award in the memory of John Moffat and Larry Lillo, two very important theater artists that we lost much too early in the 80s. And if you know somebody that could qualify for this award, then you have until May 16th to get your application in. You can send it to by email to johnandlarry@live.com. Electric Company and Radix Theatre presenting two workshops. One is already passed, but the second one is on Sunday, and this is great for actors and directors and choreographers. It's called Before the World, Before the Word, Tensions, Ticks, and Character Traits, and you can go to electriccompanytheatre.com to find out more about that. Today is the deadline to submit if you want to be an apprentice stage manager at the Arts Club for the upcoming 2018-2019 season. If you've got a degree, college or university level education or equivalent experience, some stage management experience, either as a stage manager, an ASM or apprentice. Also, if you have any experience supervising child performers, that'll help out because they're doing Matilda, and I think there's another child-oriented show that's happening this upcoming season, so that'll help. Then they also might require you to do a criminal record check. So you can submit your cover letter and resume along with your availability by the end of business today. Send it to Teddy Forsyth. She's the human resources boss at the Arts Club Theater. And her address is Suite 203, 162 West 1st Avenue. Just head on down to the Olympic Village and drop it off. Or you can email it to her at humanresources@artsclub.com. The Spotlight on Mental Health organization is looking for a stage manager, instructor, assistant, for a show called Play It Forward. They need someone with some stage management experience and also either firsthand or familial experience with mental health issues, just somebody that can understand what they're dealing with. This is for a production that will potentially be running from early December until April of next year. The person will be responsible for assisting with theater classes, administration, publicity, and stage management duties. If you're interested, you can contact Diane Arsenault at darsenault7@gmail.com. Chemainus Theater Festival is looking for a stage manager for the summer kids play The Little Prince. Deadline for that is also today. You can email nlam@chemainustheater.ca. Mascal Dance requires a stage manager for its upcoming production called OW. It's a contemporary dance piece, part of Dancing on the Edge Festival. And you can contact Chris at mascaldance.ca. And producer at mascaldance.ca is Chris's email address. And they would like someone who has stage management experience but is also comfortable using a lighting board, although it's not a requirement. Another stage management call. This one is for Axis Theater doing a tour of The Troll Grandfather. This is a show that will be performing throughout BC. They need someone with strong technical skills and touring experience, as well as a Class 4 BC driver's license. The production is running in early 2019 from January 21st to March the 3rd. You can send your application no later than midnight, May 20th. So you got about a week left. Send it to chris@axistheater.com. And one final stage management notice. We've got a lot of those this time. This is for Pacific Opera Victoria, and they're looking for an ASM for their 2018-19 season. They need somebody who is good at stage management, also proficient in reading music, and demonstrating key leadership and organizational skills. You should have some experience working in opera or musical theater. Be a team player who demonstrates a keen interest in building positive relationships with artists, production, and music staff. You can send your application to eHassell, that's E-H-A-S-S-E-L-L, at pov.bc.ca. Wednesday, May 30th is the application deadline for that. Green Thumb Theatre is having their general auditions at the end of the month. You've got until Monday to submit. They are looking for adult actors with a broad range of backgrounds, including but not limited to ethnicity, culture, indigenicity, body type, gender, and sexuality. Deadline to submit is May 14th. You can submit electronically by sending an up-to-date headshot and resume to Bronwyn, B-R-O-N-W-Y-N, at greenthumb.bc.ca. We have a second notice for a dance production for the Fringe Festival. It's called Shut Up and Speak. And it's going to be part of the main stage Fringe Festival this year in September 6th to 16th. The audition is next Friday, the 18th, and that's at the Concord Arts and Dance Studio. Looking for a female who is either cis, trans, or genderqueer. Any ethnicity is applicable, age between 20 and 45. This production centers the current divisive climate around feminism and what it means to be a feminist, the sexualization of women, and what comes after hashtag Me Too, and the sharing of stories of survivors of sexual assault, abuse, and celebrating the powers of change. These ideas will be explored and developed through drama, dance, music, and importantly, comedy. Production will be partly written and devised with the cast. As such, it is an asset for performers to have some experience in devising, developing original performance. Direct Theatre supports actual visual and artistic representation of different ethnicities in theatre. They're especially seeking submissions from non-white, multidisciplinary females, including cis, trans, and queer gender, performers to join the cast. Send your submissions to Jill Raymond. That's hellodirecttheatre@gmail.com. And we've got a couple more here. We got Speakeasy Theater doing The Classroom by Marquienne Teresiak. And that is going to be happening in November. This is a play that tackles the reality of embedded Indigenous racism in our communities today. The Classroom is a challenging piece that explores community and racial politics in the prairies. The ethnic specificity of the characters is outlined. They're looking for two Indigenous actors, one to play Byron, a 16-year-old, and his mom, Minnie, who is in her 30s to 50s. One 16-year-old Caucasian actor and one actor to play the teacher, and this is open to all ethnicities. You can send your audition to Speakeasy Theater at speakeasytheater.ca, and the auditions for that are happening May 20th and 21st. And also happening on the 21st is auditions for Kim's Convenience, the play that became a TV series, and that's going to be happening at Pacific Theater at 12th and Hemlock. The production is happening in September, and the auditions are on the 21st of May. You can contact Anne at pacifictheater.org. And let's see, there should be, there's one more here. The Sidekick Players in Tsawwassen are doing Burned by John Muggleton. This is a new Canadian murder mystery dark comedy. The production is happening in October. The audition is tomorrow at the Tsawwassen Art Center, looking for two males and two females, any age up until the 50s. So why don't you check out that? And if you want details on these or any other audition notices, you can go to VancouverActorsGuide.com, Vancouver Public Library, at vpl.ca. And if you have a notice that you would like read on the air, you can share it on the Dave Radio Facebook page, or you can email us at DaveRadioPodcast@hotmail.com. And that's our show. Thanks for spending your lunch hour with us. Remember, if you have a song that needs airplay, a show that needs audience, an audition that needs actors, a class that needs students, or a film shoot that needs background, we're here for you. You can send your details to DaveRadioPodcast@hotmail.com. Like us on Facebook, and you can join us on Twitter and Instagram, where we're known as @CITRDaveRadio. If you missed any or all of today's show, or you want to relive glorious moments from the past, you can check out the podcast archive at CITRs.ca. And stick around, because the great Beppe Crespin Presents is on, and that'll be followed at 3:30 by our napkin boy, Nardwar the Human Serviette Presents. Dave Radio returns next week at this same time. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the stolen territories of the Musqueam peoples here at UBC. My name is Audrey. I am filling in today, and I will be filling in for the rest of the summer. So excited to share the summer with all of you. Today, we have a very special show. We are celebrating a very special person, and that person is Tracy Vath. because happy birthday, Tracy Bath. Tracy is a wonderful person, a beautiful soul, and has done a lot for the local music scene, is one of the organizers at the Toast Collective. And yeah, we just really all love Tracy here at CITR. So what a fun way to spend their birthday than by celebrating with a whole bunch of local music by female and non-binary people. So I'm going to start off with a song from one of Tracy's projects called Shredded Amps, which I just adore. And this is a song from their new album, World Well Lost.